You know, I think part of my process is that, you know, people say, oh, I don't feel like the council is listening, or I don't think we're heard. And part of me having these kind of surveys is, okay, I want you to feel included. I want you to feel not only included, but that you have skin in the game.
Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime, in your browser, WFPR.FM, and in the local Franklin Mass FM radio dial. Yeah, the dial or the knobs or the push buttons, 102.9 is the number. Preset it, and it's always there and ready for you. Here in our glorious studio again today with Town Councilor Max Morgiello.
It's glorious. Max. It's glorious. I'm doing okay. Thank you for having me, Stephen. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. There was a council meeting, and we're going to do some quarterbacking. Okay, what just happened and what does it mean for us?
So I think we had a good number of things. We had the created a charter review subcommittee of the council to go and do a preliminary look in as to what needs to be done going forward, whether we need to kick it to a full charter review committee, whether we can have some small fixes.
Because the discussion has generally been, you know, speculating.
Yeah.
And you really need a list of, okay, even if it's 10, just to make, for conversation's sake, if it's 10 things, but five of them require the full process versus these, maybe the low-hanging fruit requires this, then what's the prioritization? Right. Maybe we take all 10 and go through the full charter process, which theoretically can open that can of worms. Council respectfully doesn't have as much control because it's in control of the Charter Commission. And that, I think, is part of the discussion. So all valid, but somebody needs to at least come up with that short list. And
absolutely. And I think the biggest thing we hear from people is about staggered terms and having that continuity between councils. So that's another thing that we're going to have to, you know, that's not something that the subcommittee could do or the town council could even do on its own. That would have to be a charter review process.
Correct. Right. Because my understanding, at least from the historical perspective, having talked at least unofficially with those who were part of the prior, the reason it didn't go because nobody could figure out how to implement it. So it's a great idea, but how do we divide it up?
And then the other thing is probably, you know, whether it's the Board of Health or, you know, the Assessor's Board or Town Clerk, whether those things should just stay elected or remain or become appointed.
True. Right.
But I think there might be, I mean, other opportunities to look at, you know, whatever towns do with their charter reviews. I think they have charter, they have documents as to when they come out with the report and just being able to look at, you know, what, and we're like the model. I've been to, Massachusetts Municipal Association meetings where they say, oh, wow, your charter, you have the best charter.
Yes.
So Jamie said that was going to happen and he was right.
Right.
That, you know, people really like our charter. But I think we want to make sure we, do the best we can in terms of making it the best it can be without, you know, reverting back to some of the other things that might have been had in the past where, you know, I think we, sort of in history, you learn about the Progressive Era and how that the town administration, form of government was as a way to get back at sort of the big bosses, you know, in the sort of city hall around mayors and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of corruption and that kind of thing. So, you know, but I think that, you know, hopefully there'll be a lot of opportunity for the subcommittee to look at that and then pass it on to either the council to vote on just a few tweaks or the, you know, and they have to figure out, you know, if they do a try to review when that's going to be, because if it's going to be right away, you know, that's going to take away from other things. But if they do it, you know, in a few years, maybe that'll be a little bit make more sense.
Yeah, so. And so at least having the list, so we're not speculating what's on the list and what kind of prioritization are those.
Right.
You know, the one piece, two pieces that I've been talking up. One, the need to at least get away from forcing an election within 90 days if the councilor resigns. Mm-hmm. I mean, as a practical matter, there's a number of qualified people who could serve on an interim basis, and it avoids the cost of an election, which, oh, by the way, has increased with the mail ballots and early voting, et cetera. And given a budget crisis, you know, we can't afford, what, $30,000, $40,000 for an election for one person within 90 days? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I understand where it came from, But now, potentially, we'll have an opportunity to change that. The other piece I would advocate for is giving the school committee 9 members. Mm-hmm. Respectfully, they do manage a larger portion of the budget. Granted, you have the total budget, but your portion of the budget is a little bit smaller than theirs. And they need the 9 to fully staff the subcommittees to do all the work that the school department, I think, mm-hmm. really needs the support for. But that's my 2 cents. We'll just throw it out there, see what happens. So
absolutely. And I think, but the most important thing is to listen. You know, I think I could have my own opinions. You could have your own opinions. But right. if people just get on, you know, if people just do what they think is best for themselves or what, you know, for the personal opinions, that's not what the role is for right. that position. So
right. yeah, I have a process perspective. Not everybody else does. Yeah. Maybe have somebody else who's got another axe to grind and they want to do something else. I totally understand. That's fine. Let's talk about it and prioritize accordingly, which you're about, you as in the council, mm-hmm. are about to figure out how to do that. So
absolutely.
That's a good thing. You got some bad news on the snow and ice budget, which no surprise given all the storms we've had.
Yeah, it's been a mess. And I wanted to, I mean, kudos to the DPW and all of our, you know, responders for helping out with that. But it really is going to hurt the town's pocketbook, and it doesn't come cheap. And I think we used up all of our all the money allocated for it, and then we also use all the money in the snow stabilization count.
Potentially, given, I think Jamie said it was going to be in excess of 2.1. If the budget was 1.1, okay, where's that other one coming from?
Right.
I think there's 700 something in the stabilization, mm-hmm. so there goes that, and mm-hmm. now we're still short 4. Well, there's 200 in free cash, and where do we get the other 200? Right. Oops.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, we're going to have to work that out, and, we're just going to try to have to patch things up the best we can.
Mm-hmm. So. Right. And hope it rains and doesn't snow.
Yes. Or hail, you know.
Yes. No ice.
No ice.
No ice. No ice. Yeah. And then the fire truck.
Yes, yes. So
Engine 3, which has some rail issues.
Yeah, we knew it was coming. We knew there was... I think some rod and stuff that was going to be a problem, but we were hoping it was going to stay with us a little longer.
Another year or two, according to the plan.
Yeah, so the goal was that, you know, they were talking about financing, and there's different ways to financing. Typically what they do is they get a bond, and, you know, they let the borrow money and pay it off over time through the operating budget. This time, you know, there's a question as to, whether rates could go down, or as to whether we could get a better deal if we bundle sort of the debt with some other
potential
things that we want to borrow mm-hmm. for.
Sure.
And if we do that, we can sort of get this BAN, I believe it's called.
A ban. Bond anticipation note.
Where we can sort of borrow the money now, and but wait to sort of refinance it into a bond until later. So we're going to pay the interest now, but we don't have to worry about paying the principal.
Correct.
And, you know, it's sort of a way to sort of, because there's a lot of transaction costs with getting a bond.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't, if we just get one bond for a bunch of things, we can save some money.
Sure. Yeah. And the ban is a relatively easy, inexpensive manner of given that flexibility, because then once the ban does become a bond, we still have the opportunity to use some or at least a portion of the existing stabilization account for the fire truck, or keep it for that further use and let it continue to build up for the next time, since potentially we'll have a lower interest rate. Mm-hmm. Just go that way. So it's a future decision in terms of exactly how financially we will go, mm-hmm. but at least the approval was, if we didn't buy the truck now, we were going to be a couple of years away, right. and that was, at least got resolved.
It was a good deal. I mean, I think the truck was just a floor model, and it was brand. You know, I think that if we didn't snap it up, it would have been snapped up by someone else.
Right.
So
right.
I think it was a good move to try to get that.
Yeah.
And they also have, you know, they have 3 trucks at that station in rotation. So I guess they. you know, they have the oldest truck that sort of is backs up when the other ones are out of service.
Right.
And then usually the oldest truck is that, that's sort of the backup truck.
And in this case, engine 3 technically is the oldest truck. Yes. It's no longer available.
So this new one's going to come to the front.
The new one's going to come to the front. And the two that we bought at the same time, one of those will sit in the back for a while, which is fine because then both of those will last longer. I mean, they could even rotate a couple of years off and then bring them back. But yeah, that'll help us long term.
Yeah. I think that, you know, there's also concern about the amount of salt and that kind of stuff and the trucks have to deal with. And, you know, I think between the DPW and the fire station, we don't have anything to sort of clean them off.
Right. Do we need a, quote, car wash, vehicle wash?
And how much is that? You know, is it worth it? You know, I don't know. So,
well,
it could be.
It could. We've got, what, 200 vehicles, I've heard.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
And if some of them, like the fire trucks, are $1 million, mm-hmm. million plus.
Right.
You know, maybe washing them once in a while, if it postpones that million-dollar expense, that might be worth it. But, yeah, and then the other issue with the salt, as our DPW director, Ken Aregui, has mentioned, it ends up in our water because we're groundwater. And our percent of salt is increasing as well.
Right.
So, you know, doing that kind of master planning, well, if we do this and then have to use additional sand, we got to clean the sand per regulations.
And I did check with Brutus, and the amount of water in our ponds is not yet considered, I think, a level where it would be a pollutant. Because I was asking if it was a pollutant, I believe you could use stormwater money to sort of do certain things.
To
help with the salt.
Right.
With the brine stuff, because that can alleviate some of the salt. But if it's not a pollutant, they can't really do anything with that.
No. And we're fortunate that, it hasn't risen. It's continuing to rise, but it's not risen to a level that it's an issue yet.
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's certainly something to be mindful of.
Right.
You know, I think that covers everything with the fire station.
Right. And then you had an interesting topic on some parking fees.
Yes. Oh, boy. So we currently have parking meters. One of them is in front of the Forge Park lot. It's a separate lot. And that gets some utilization because it's actually cheaper than the Forge Park lot. But then there's another one near Ferrara's that it's like always dead. No one ever uses it. But the point is that...
The Depot lot.
Depot lot. The Depot lot is used, but the one near Ferrara's
is underutilized.
Underutilized.
Right.
But we did get like $20,000 of parking fees that have been used for the meters.
It's accumulated since they got implemented, 3 years ago now?
So we collected that money and then we reappropriated it. And this is where I sort of gotten a little tizzy at the meeting. We're using it to spend on the meters themselves. So
that was the whole point. If you laid the parking free and available to anybody, first come, first serve... The wrong people technically were going to grab it.
Right.
So by putting a meter in, at least you had them thinking about what they were going to do. And oh, by the way, the meters would at least fund the process.
Mm.
That was the way it conceived.
Yeah. I think, you know, we could still try maybe like a 2 hour, 3 hour, 4 hour, you know, or like, you know, maybe the harder to reach spots are 4 hours, you know, and the closer ones are 3 hours.
That was one of the points that I was led to believe it was going to be by the hour. But right now it's just $3 if you're there for 15 minutes or the entire 8 to 10 hours. So,
yeah.
The statistics that are available theoretically would just say, okay, we had 65 used during the day, but you don't know if the 65 stayed all day or if 20 of them came in and out using the same spot. There's no way of knowing.
Right.
So, okay.
Yeah.
There goes that idea.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think ultimately, you know, I'm about doing the most good and trying to make sure that, you know, we... if we can do it without passing the cost on to consumers and not have a tragedy of the common situation where we don't have any parking because everyone's using it, you know, I would prefer to do, you know, to have something more affordable. But if you have a situation where everyone's just going to use everything all the time, then I do think we need to sort of, continue the meters.
Yeah, and at least it's fee-based, so only those who are parking and paying are the ones who are bearing the burden of the meter cost.
That is true.
Yeah.
But, I, you know, so, But yeah, I think the other thing was, you know, the master plan was trying to figure out, you know, if we do have residential parking in the area, whether we wanted to have like a overnight parking pass
or a resident sticker,
right? You know, because I think that, you know, that would. The more parking spots we build into buildings, the less room there is for actually like downtown businesses and that kind of stuff to actually utilize that space or to live in. So, you know, and it can be pretty tight downtown. So making sure we utilize parking efficiently, as well as another part of the master plan was trying to have a shared parking, stormwater fee rebate for people who for businesses that share their parking lots downtown.
Right.
And as, I think as a carrot.
Yeah, that's a good carrot, at least. It sounds like it would be practically usable for the business. Again, they're paying. They could pay less if they share the parking. For somebody with a fairly large parking lot, that would make more sense because even the ones that are downtown, I don't see them heavily utilized. You know, whether it's 25 or 30 or 40%, then that would still make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
If they were 100% utilized all the time, then maybe not. But I don't see that utilization that high. But right. That's just my
I think
my
we just need a little nudge. I think a little carrot, a little nudge. I mean, even if it's a little bit of a rebate, I think, you know, if it helps a business's bottom line, hopefully they take the carrot. So
it would help the business and help the customers of other businesses by at least making more parking available.
Yes, absolutely.
So that could be a win-win, but we'll see. The other piece, relatively easy. You had two more measures to go through referral to the planning board. For the residents and listeners, there were two prior. The planning board had scheduled a meeting, and one of the storms kind of wiped that meeting out, so they never got to do the hearing. Now they're effectively going to do all four and then bring them back to you. Two, I think, are related to the MBTA zoning, and two, as I understand it, on that crossing neighborhood with some final tweaks that apparently were effectively mistakenly, some pieces were put in mistakenly or left out mistakenly as they were implementing what should have been approved.
Yeah, so. I think there's some footnotes and some tables that just kind of got meshed together, and it's really mostly just a housekeeping thing.
Yeah,
it's
not like technical adjustments.
It's not like we know we're coming in and we're going to, you know, build, you know, skyscrapers or anything.
Right.
So
right.
I think that it's not anything to be concerned about. It's just a housekeeping measure.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's how I understand it as well. So it's going off to the planning board. They're going to do their public hearings, send it back to you. You'll do your two hearings, two readings, and then certainly discuss and ultimately vote. So, sometime in April, I think Jamie said. And then the big set of the meeting, since you had adjusted the agenda to get to the goals, which had been kicked down the street at a prior session.
Yeah, also we got them done when we've already been a quarter of the way through the term. So, I took this very seriously. You know, I put out two surveys. One was to sort of get people's feedback as to, you know, what goals in the master plan should be considered to be actually put into the goals for this session for the town council to work on. And so one was just to nominate them, and people nominated a whole bunch of different things. I nominated a few myself. And then I had people vote on them. I had a poll. We had over 150 people vote on different goals that they wanted to prioritize.
Yep.
And then I tried to incorporate that feedback into what I put forward to the council and to Jamie. And, you know, the goal process of negotiation, you know, this will be a lot of work. I don't know if we can do this, you know, but I think this is appropriate, you know. I think the biggest one, it was in regards to, in the master plan, it was referred to a set allocation. So it was, you know, the school should have a certain amount, a certain percentage allocated to it. And, you know, through negotiation with Jamie, I think that, I think we needed to make it sort of fair, incorporate all departments, you know, so it's not just singling out the schools, because I think that the us versus them narrative can be somewhat divisive.
Sure.
We settled on looking at sort of an objective process or an objective, having the joint budget subcommittee look at an objective process for looking at the budget. I don't think he fully understood where the set allocation was coming from at first. I think he didn't understand that. You know, I explained to him that there was some folks on the school side who felt that sort of politics came into things a little bit with regards to how things were allocated. And he didn't, when he sort of heard that, he sort of, I think things clicked for him. And I think he actually was at the meeting, he actually wanted it to go through the Joint Budget Subcommittee, even though there was a little pushback. So I think that, you know, the town administrator's on board with that, and it's something that, you know, hopefully make things fair going forward so that we don't have to worry about, you know, things being arbitrary or being appearing to be arbitrary when we make budget decisions. Because I think that there's been a lot of angst around, you know, why are we funding this but not this, and, you know, wanting a rationale for that. And so
I think related to that, the town as a whole, I think, needs to tell a better story of the structural deficit and how over time we effectively landed in it. Because there has been a whole series of, at least in my almost 20 years reporting, of measures taken by the town to help the schools. Likewise, the schools, you know, taking measures on their own, particularly redistricting, so that at one point the town was saying, well, fire department redistrict, police department redistrict, when does the school go to? The schools did.
Yes.
Town then also restructured within finance and HR so that the between town and school sides, those are now joint, more jointly together with still separation of duties, but with coordination and collaboration to cover each other's, you know, work hours and stuff like that. So all of those things are good, but they're not fully understood by the general public.
And I think a lot of things, you know, I was talking to a constituent maybe a few weeks ago, and I went through all the lists of cuts that we've been through, the library, for the police, and all the things we've done to make things more efficient, and it's totally over the radar, or under the radar. So I think the more we can tell those stories about how we're, what we're doing to make things more efficient, the better.
The other simple piece, too, and on the one hand, Jamie and even Jeff Pryor, in the town council document that you get for the budget proposal, it lists the department budget, town administrator recommends, council recommends, and approved, et cetera. But there's never been, other than one exception that I know of, a difference between what the department recommends and the town administrator recommends. So on the one hand, okay, everybody's putting forward, quote, the level service or whatever the circumstances are. They're putting forward that budget and everybody's in agreement. But on the school side, generally, there's always been, this is what we're asking for, this is what we could have gotten. So you always had that difference, that there's more there. You never see that unless you pay attention on the FinCom side, because George and the prior chairs always said, well, what else would you ask for? And they always have bunches of stuff, but it's never in the docs. So somebody looks at the docs and they're completely in a line, except for schools. And people don't fully understand that. It's subtle.
I think when, when someone's, when department head, you know, when someone's your boss, it's going to be different than if someone isn't directly. And so I think that, you know, that's the quiet part out loud, I think, for that.
But the other piece, at least, you know, the goal session, given, if you will, some of the contentious discussion in the first set of the goals being discussed, which resulted in kind of kicking them down the road to this session, it was a much more amicable discussion. It was a rather fruitful. There were some resolutions and accommodations made across the board. I felt much better coming out of that discussion than a prior meeting. We'll leave it at that.
No, I think, you know, I had some, you know, goals that I proposed, and some people had some feedback, and we worked them out pretty, we had a little back and forth. And that's actually one of the nice things about the council. I mean, as much as I like Robert's rules, people know me, I think that the being able to relax it enough to have a little bit of a back and forth was actually helpful in this case. I think when it goes crazy, you know, that's going to be a problem. But, you know, I think we had some feedback earlier in the meeting about the, climate leader, being a department of DOER climate leader designation, and that's sort of having a green, making sure we have a more green.
Because we're already at one level, this would give us a different level.
Yes, we'd be like a certification, I think. And so, but it's not an easy goal. I mean, we tried it last year, I believe, and we didn't get that far. But I think that there's a lot of different steps. It's like a goal within goals within goals.
Sure.
But I'm hopeful that that's one thing that we looked at that a lot of people were passionate about in the survey that could we could move forward about. And if we do this, we can get grant money for a sustainability coordinator, which mm-hmm. I think is something that'd be really exciting if right. we can get that.
Yeah.
There are steps. You got to have, you know, an energy electric fleet. You have to have a sustainability committee. You have to adopt a specialized stretch code.
Stretch code, correct.
Right. So there are a lot of steps that go that, and the stretch, you know, zoning, you know, having the bylaw changes, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into that. So yeah. I acknowledge that, but I'm hopeful that we can move forward with that. One of the other environmental things that we got forward was composting at expanding composting mm-hmm. at Beaver Street,
right.
which was a big priority for a lot of people in the survey that I
sure.
put out.
Yeah.
I think. You know, and as much as I appreciate, you know, the feedback from people and I try to incorporate that in, I also have to incorporate the people who aren't necessarily included in the survey, people who might have full-time jobs or juggling full-time mm-hmm. jobs who, you know, be struggling to be represented there. And so, right. you know, looking at things like GATRA and having a fixed bus route is something that I was able to get put forward through that. One that was already in Jamie's draft was around, you know, making sure we have a good fiscal health for the getting our fiscal house in order. And that was, you know, that's something that we, of course, have to work on.
Yeah, it's part of that strategic planning, not just in terms of what are we going to do when, but how are we going to fund this over time? Yeah.
We also are going to take a look back at sort of what planning stuff we have done in the past. Originally, I wanted to look forward and say, what can we do in the future? But we're at least looking backwards and say, okay, what do we do for? What do we do in the past so we know what we're do for in the future?
Yeah.
You know, we included some infrastructure goals around funding infrastructure. I was able to include sort of an addendum to that to talk about ADA accessibility for as mm-hmm. well as traffic calming. You know, we have to talk about traffic, and that's a big always on people's minds. I hear it all the time.
Yeah.
And being able to put traffic improvements and busy intersections is something that we were able to say, hey, we're also going to look at this when we do our goals.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting on the ADA piece coming out of the Commission on Disabilities meeting last week that I attended. The recording will be coming out sometime this week. 39 of those tactile pads mm-hmm. or tactile awareness pads at the crosswalks, mm-hmm. 39 of those were replaced.
Oh, wow.
Across the town.
There we go.
That was an amazing
win.
Number.
That's a good victory. That's, you know? That's, we should just be celebrating.
It kind of flew below yeah. the radar.
Yeah.
So.
And yeah. it's little things. I mean, I when I was at Bridgewater State, I did as part of student government there, I did an accessibility walk where we would go through throughout the campus and see, okay, mm-hmm. if I was in a wheelchair, if I, you know, if I wasn't able to walk, where would I not be able to travel?
Sure, yeah.
And that was something that was very helpful in pointing out, you know, and some of these handicap accessible doors, and I was like, you have to go all the way around the back, and it's like, right. it's a maze.
It is.
So I think, right. you know, that definitely makes me appreciate, so, you know, more what people with physical disabilities have to go through when they're navigating mm-hmm. Navigating
yes, the environment. Especially in public places, yeah. there's always an opportunity, and clearly there's the grandfathering for any of the other private buildings, if you will, but historical museum, you know, you look at the front of it and there's steps up and there's nothing relatively telling you, okay, if you want to really get in, you got to go around the back, to your point, right? It's accessible,
right.
but it's in the back.
Well, it's not accessible if you don't know it's accessible.
If you don't know at the front that it's there, yeah.
Yeah.
And I know there's people discussing that and working on that, so I don't, it just happened as an easy example of mm-hmm. a public space that, you know, is relatively inaccessible.
You know, another thing we did was we talked about the downtown revitalization and trying to see if we could work with our downtown neighbors as to trying to get some, you know, work on the vacancies and trying to get more businesses downtown. I know to that point, Councilor Malloy proposed a goal to have like a restaurant week, mm-hmm. which was, you know, another way to sort of drum up business and support for that. And,
sure.
and as Jamie would tell you, all that that extra meals tax revenue is going to go yep. back to us. And, you know, there were some goals that weren't able to make it in. But I think like 90% of the people who filled out the survey had at least one goal that was
oh, good.
Either in some way, some fashion, you know,
something
able to
at least get carried through.
So,
yeah.
So I think that, You know, I think part of my process is that, you know, people say, oh, I don't feel like the council is listening, or I don't think we're heard. And part of me having these kind of surveys is, okay, I want you to feel included. I want you to feel not only included, but that you have skin in the game.
Sure.
You know, that you're, you know, that you're engaged, that people have, you know, engaging people just to, you know, because mm-hmm. It's a lot of people, you know, make their minds known on certain cases, but then on sort of when things are going on, you know, on other times people don't feel like they're not paying attention.
Right.
So,
yeah, people want to be, one, recognized, right. I hear you, mm-hmm. as opposed to, well, we've never done it that way. Don't say that. I hear you. Let's talk about it. Explain, right. And then, you know, we'll see what happens.
So, yeah, you know, I think I'm trying to do what I can to engage with residents, and I've been trying to engage my email. Whenever I receive an mm-hmm. email from someone, I'll do my best to respond right back and refer to whoever the appropriate department is.
Right.
And sometimes I don't always have the answers, and sometimes there's not always something I am able to do, but, you know, just being able to communicate that and, you know, try to let people know that we're doing the best we can. And I think people have been receptive. Even if you say I got your email, like people just
right. acknowledge people, I got it.
So,
it didn't get lost in spam land or something.
No. So
good. Well, I think that kind of covers the session for the what it was. And still, you got a boatload of work ahead of you.
Absolutely. Well, now we just gave more to ourselves to do. So, but I think I.
Well, unfortunately, as I think we were discussing offline, most of that is going to be done by the town and or right. town departments. You don't have to actually. You just have to oversee it, mm-hmm. check in on it. They'll come back and say, oh, by the way, you asked us to do this. This is what it is, right?
Right.
And hopefully sometime this year. And then given the normal process, I'm assuming sometime December-ish, you'll do a look back on the year. And we set goals, granted in March, but you set goals.
Yes.
And this is where we're at.
Right.
And then you can rejigger for the next calendar year.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the cyclical piece of the government.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Steve.
Well, thank you for coming in and sharing. You know, we always try to get to those two questions in terms of what does it mean for us and what just happened, right? And by getting behind into the rationale of some of that, I think hopefully, assuming people will listen, and granted, even if everybody doesn't, some people will, they'll at least be more informed to talk to their neighbor when they come up with the question as to what's going on. Well, I heard Max and Steve talked about it and they said this, and thereby the word will spread. So
absolutely.
That's my hope, and it takes two to tango. I can't do it alone.
We do it because Franklin matters.
Oh, you took my line, but I'll second it. Absolutely. We do it because Franklin matters. So thank you for doing this. Thank you, listeners. And we've already said the line, so we'll close with a chuckle instead. Till next time. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements, and I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.